Mishenichnas av mematim besimcha. You know, there are two ways to translate this phrase from the Gemara in Ta'anit. And the way in which we do so, in many ways, will define our relationship to the two faces with which the blows that life deals us can be received. What do I mean? Well, the reality is, any tragedy, challenge, loss, stumbling can either be growthful or damaging. And in order to determine which, we have to figure out how we relate to it. And so one of the ways that we can understand this phrase, or we can even just translate, Mema'atim besimcha, when it comes the month of Ar, we reduce our joy. It's sad. The things that have happened in our past that we recall into the present at this time of year are simply sad. And we're broken. We live in a broken world. And the thing that we do in the face of brokenness is we simply remove joy. That's very damaging, but real nonetheless. There is another way to read the phrase, which is when we come into the month of Av, we reduce with joy. Mematim b'simcha. It's a recognition of what we're called upon to do in the face of loss, tragedy, blows, and yet we do it with joy. Unless you think that this is simply some sort of vort, a creative reading, well, let's look at the companion statement. Mishenichnas Adar marbim besimcha. When we come into the month of Adar, the month of Purim, that spring, joyful month, then what do? We increase joy, or we increase joyfully. Right? And there, all those behaviors which Adar brings to be, you know, sometimes the over-the-top, explosive, out-of-the-bounds energy, is both an increase of joy and joyful increasing. But meanwhile, when we read this phrase about entering into Av and reducing with joy or reducing our joy, we can find a lever in order to move out of the way the misunderstanding of the relationship between growth and pain. So in order to determine, for me at least, whether my experiences are growthful or just damaging, I generally ask myself, did they add koach? Right? Did they add life force? Did they add power? Did they add ability? Or did they reduce it? And in order to judge that, I have to ask within what time span I'm questioning. And I need to give some definition of koach. And these two things are true because every blow has to be taken in context. And not just taken, but actually understood and ultimately healed. Right? By the way, this is why we offer nechama to the avel, why we offer nechama to the mourner. And what does nechama mean? Well, we'll get there in a second, but we offer it in the name of Hamakom, right? That great and sacred name of God, which both indicates the intimacy of relationship, which is available in a place. Hamakom means place, but also the powerful definitive aspect of the divinity, which is not in the world, but is the place of the world. God is Hamakom. He's the context for existence. So we offer nechama to the mourner in the name of the context. And what is nechama? Well, you know, in a couple of weeks, we're going to read out in Shul, Nachamu, Nachamu Ami, those great and moving, awesome, inspiring words of the prophet Isaiah. Comfort, comfort my people. Nachamu Ami. Nachem, lenachem is to comfort, is to console. And yet, when we look elsewhere, and particularly in the story of Shaul's failed kingship, we see that God says to the prophet Shmuel, the prophet Samuel, Nechamdi ki himlachti Shaul, right? I regret that I made Shaul king. And lest you think it's problematic that God should regret his choices as if he didn't know how it was going to play out, less than a chapter later, the prophet says to Shaul the king, Netzach Yisrael lo yinachem. Right? That the Eternal One of Israel does not regret. He does not change his mind. Because that's the reality of the meaning of that word. That's how one word can mean both comfort and regret. Because it's about changing your perspective on something. You know, when I regret something, generally, I thought it was a good idea to begin with. And then after I see the consequences, foreseen or not, I realize, that was not such a good idea. Regret sets in as my perspective changes with time. In the same way, when tragedy strikes, there is a healing which can come from understanding that if I'm committed to life, then somehow the all-encompassing pain which I have will also pass, and I will continue to live. Now, this is a comfort which is first shared in silence. I have to hold that sense of contents, of context, of the makom, of something outside of the tragedy of the mourner, silently within myself, and not share it with mourn. This is why the custom is, in a shiva house, in a house of mourning, that we sit silently until the mourner speaks. I mean, the friends of Job, the ultimate mourner, as he sat on a trash heap scraping his boils with a shard of clay, were silent for 7 days until he opened his mouth to speak. And only then they shared their painful wisdom. So just take it to heart. Silence, but an inner holding of a place which lies outside the totality of the trauma of the mourner. At whatever type of blow it may be that they're mourning, hold that place within the self and offer the nechama of Hamakom Yinechem Etchem. Let the place comfort you. Let it be known that there is a context which can actually integrate the brokenness of tragedy into a wholeness of being. So how do we transform the blows that life deals us from damaging to growthful? How do we move from reducing our joy to joyfully reducing? Well, in my experience, there are a few critical pieces. First of all, time. Time, 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 time. Time does not heal all wounds. And if you don't know that, you better know it now. It is a necessary but insufficient element in the process of healing. Nevertheless, it's absolutely critical. Together with that time of giving oneself, by the way, time is the ultimate act of compassion. Giving oneself time, accepting the fact that we're in process, knowing that though our temple was destroyed 2,000 years ago and we were beaten to the ground and the earth was salted behind us, that, you know what, in time we will heal. Hey, we're the people that's managed to construct a positive identity out of our slavery in Egypt over 3,000 plus years ago. So we're working on it. Nevertheless, time is not enough. There also needs to be a deep recognition, and I would even say acceptance of the loss, of the blow, right? A hakara, right? An awareness, a conscious embracing of the pain, of the reality of the loss. Because ultimately, if something has been lost or broken, that reality must be internalized before we can move on toward either fixing or healing. And how does that fixing and healing come? Well, ultimately, it's about telling a healthful story. One is remembering that there was something which lay before the breaking. I was once whole, you know. But this cannot be a mistaken attempt to skip over the brokenness and return to what was, because what was will never be again. It has to be a healthful story which can paint a picture of a healthy past, integrate it into a present identity with its brokenness, and motivate that identity to build a future which honors both the glory of the past and the broken reality of the present by combining them to a fixed future. So this is what it needs. It needs time. It needs this hakara, this deep recognition of the reality of loss. And it needs me to be telling a healthy story. So here we are, approaching the ninth of Av. And the reality is, the task of the ninth of Av is in that recognition of being in Avil, of being in mourning. You must cry before the laughter will come. And the task of the ninth of Av is to sit with it. Whatever the it is for you, whether the brokenness of the world manifests itself in your personal struggles, or your perception of the national struggles, or your passion for the global pain and suffering and need for healing, or some cosmic sense of the loss of connection with the divine. Whatever it is, sit with it. Sit with that brokenness until you can't look away anymore. Until the veils and the excuses and all the rationalizations that we use to move through daily life fall away. And it makes us cry. Because if we can look at the brokenness of reality on whatever scale we feel it, in such an honest way, we can have that deep recognition that it brings us to tears, well then, the great gift of brokenness can emerge. Because if there's anything to be found in brokenness, then there's the hope that lies in knowing that what was is no more, and therefore, what will be is on the horizon. We have to see the glimmers of the future in the brokenness of the past. Because we call God Mikveh Yisrael, right? The hope of Israel. But that word mikveh has another meaning other than hope. It also means the pool in which we immerse, right? In a mikveh, you immerse before some women, before giving birth, before conversion, before returning to intimate relations in purity. Some men do it before Shabbat. A mikveh is that touching of the waters of Eden, the primordial embryonic state of potential, wherein healing doesn't mean going back to the perfection of what was, but rather setting oneself free from the brokenness which is, in order to become that which you are not yet. And so here it is, as we inch closer to the ninth of Av, and Rosh Chodesh is on the horizon. As we enter into this sacred month, let us remember that we need to reduce our joy and have that deep recognition and acceptance of what has been lost. And yet, we also have to do it joyfully, because there's a story to be told. The sages tell us that on the day the temple was destroyed, the Redeemer was born, and his name will be Tzedek, or Tzemach, sorry, right? Tzemach meaning sprout, that just as the seed has to rot in the ground in order that its potential can bind earth, air, water, heaven and earth together into a living, thriving being, so too the brokenness with which we confront ourselves on the ninth of Av, if we embrace it with a drop of the joy which lies in the freedom that brokenness provides from the past and the potential for the future, then we might just merit to be redeemed. Shabbat Shalom. If you like this Torah, you can find more at sulamyakov.com. You can follow us on SoundCloud or search us out on iTunes or Stitcher, or you can come on down to Beit Midrash Sulam Yaakov in beautiful Nachlaot Yerushalayim.